We're around the bend and headed for home on the Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast, a tad more than halfway through the 2015 season. Week 6, it greeted us with a handful of big games, such as Southlake Carroll's double overtime win against Coppell, and a few huge upsets, such as Plano East picking up its first loss of the season to a resurgent McKinney Boyd, and Jesuit snapping Skyline's 49-game district winning streak. Avi, Matt, and Corbett talk about that. We interview Jesuit coach Brandon Hickman and preview an important slate of 5A games from Week 7, including the Frisco ISD battle between Lone Star and Centennial, all coming up on the podcast. The Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast, we're in Week 7. It's not the full crew this week.
No.
Greg Riddle, shout out to Greg Riddle taking care of his sick kids. It's that time of year, Matt. Are you ready for some sick kid duty here in the next
I'm not ready
weeks?
For it, but I'm expecting it.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, kids, you know, sick.
Yeah.
It's going to school, being kids.
Avi's like 12 years old. He does not have children. Greg is at
that
home.
That I know of.
We'll see you, that you know of. That's right. Avi Zalen, how are you doing today?
Oh, man. I've been taking L's all weekend, so we're going to try to snap out of it this morning.
He says that, but he's a University of Indiana graduate.
And University.
University of Indiana graduate. And as far as I know, they were leading Ohio State at halftime
on
Saturday. That's not an L. That's a W.
No, yeah.
Pyrrhic victory.
So one of the best stories I've ever heard. Is one Lee Corso used to coach IU. Not a lot of people know that. And the story goes that he was playing Ohio State one year, I believe, and he was up at halftime. And so he posed with the scoreboard to get a picture with it because he said that, you know, this is not going to happen again, at least while he was coach. So, yeah, it's an exciting time for Indiana football, but they do this thing where they give you enough hope where you're like, oh, this could be something, and then ultimately you know, it doesn't turn out well. But, no, it was exciting. It was fun to watch, like, a team be relevant for once.
They're 4-1. There's always basketball. hold on a second.
No.
I got to stop laughing. Hey, Matt Wixon.
Hey.
There's basketball season for you.
We're not
going to
be that bad.
Matt Wixon, an Arizona graduate, and they'll be good this year.
Yeah, that's what football seasons always run up to basketball season.
Right.
Last year, Arizona was in a BCS bowl, and I'm still not sure a lot of people knew that, who were Arizona.
Oh, man, Rich
like,
Rod's down there.
We're just getting our Arizona basketball tickets.
Hey, good week of surprises in week 6. We'll talk about that in part 1. We have an interview with one of those surprises, Jesuit coach Brandon Hickman, in part 2, and we'll talk about the games to watch this week in part 3. Matt, let's talk about the game of the week as far as expectations going in, and that was Southlake Carroll and Coppell. Rhiannon was at that game.
Right.
Rhiannon is not here with us today to talk to us about the overtime excitement, but double overtime.
I knew that game was going to be close. I mean, I would never predict double overtime, but I wrote something saying, watch out, that this is Coppell and Carroll. It doesn't matter. Like the last 6 or 7 years, one team might be reeling a little bit. Usually it would be Coppell. Carroll doesn't reel very often, but Coppell always plays Carroll tough, and Coppell's good this year.
Well, Carroll was reeling in the first half. In fact, with 3 minutes and 49 seconds left in the third quarter, Mason Holmes had fumbled. They kick a 25-yard field goal, Coppell does, to go up 24-7, a 21-point lead, or not a 21-point lead, but a 17-point lead there with just a quarter to go. And the Dragon Mystique, they come rolling back. Mason Holmes with two quick drives and two big stops from Carroll's defense. Holmes to Farrar on a two-play drive, 75-yard touchdown. Zach Farrar, their receiver, had a tremendous game. Nine catches, 222, and three scores. He also scores on a 38-yard touchdown with 7 minutes and 48 seconds to draw them within three. That was after a three-and-out forced by the Carroll defense. Coppell gets to midfield, but they have a negative rushing yard right there at midfield, lose 8 on first down. They have to punt the ball. And then it's Holmes to little Jordan Humphrey, get it to the 1, 4th and goal at the 1. They end up kicking a field goal to send the game into overtime. And in overtime, they end up taking their first lead of the game in the second OT, 38-31. Coppell goes for 2 after scoring. They get the second overtime score, but decide that they're going to roll the dice. And their defense was gassed, as is what the coach had said. you know, in the post game is that, you know, they just felt like this was the time to
they
do
didn't
it.
Do it, yeah.
Yeah. And he ends up, the quarterback, Brady McBride, gets pulled down on a sweep on that to end the game. But, you know, that's a great win for Carroll, but Coppell, they're now 3-3, probably one of the better 500 teams in our area.
If you look at those losses.
Yeah.
Oh, double OT to Carroll, Cedar Hill, and with Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, which
right.
is a good program from up there.
But a tough loss for them at home. Carroll improves to 4-1, and that was their first district ball game. So they are now 1-0 overall. But, you know, I was surprised by this result. I thought that Carroll was going to, you know, pull out for, you know, maybe a two-score win. But you've got to hand it to Coach DeWitt and his kids, a good performance by Coppell, even in the loss.
Yeah, I thought it would be close. I didn't think Carroll would be pushed this far, especially after the way Carroll played the week before at Abilene, which is not an easy place to play. But like you said, you know, it's a tribute to Coppell and what they could do. And I think Coppell is going to be a dangerous team down the line. I mean, they're just one of those teams that can hang with just about anybody. And if you don't have your A game or you make a few mistakes, they'll take advantage and they'll beat you.
The problem for Coppell is the fact that they are going to be a Division I school, and they'll get the winner of your DeSoto.
DeSoto's been their nemesis in recent years. Yeah.
So they would end up having to play the winner of DeSoto and Allen, you know, straight away in the playoffs, which would be pretty tough. Let's just be honest.
Yes.
Yeah. As far as some other games that was impressive, I went out and watched first half of Duncanville and South Grand Prairie, and Reginald Samples had those kids playing really well to start up the game. Two touchdowns by Alfredo Porter put them up 14-0 early, but South Grand Prairie ends up chipping away late. Greg Eisworth didn't have a great passing game, only 117 yards in the air, but three touchdowns on the ground, and he played safety for most of the game. Every time I was out there, he might be one of the few 5A or 6A guys that are playing both ways. I can't,
and especially a quarterback. Somebody
right.
who's playing quarterback on one side is not going to play a lot. Maybe, you know, like to knock down a pass on a Hail Mary, but he plays possessions.
He was out there for the majority of the time that I was out there, and that was in the first quarter, first and second quarters of that game. He and Jeffrey Okuda, their highly recruited junior.
It's one of the best secondaries you'll find anywhere in DFW.
Because they have Caesar Williams as well, and who's a recruit. But Okuda was playing part running back. They put him at receiver occasionally, but then he was getting, you know, blows. You know, he was getting some rest on the sideline. But you know, for Eisworth, I think he was out there almost the entire time. And he was running the ball. I mean, they were using him as a primary runner. Great performance there. South Grand Prairie wins, improves to 2-0 in district, 5-1 overall with a 28-26.
And Duncanville gave him a really good fight that game.
Absolutely.
I mean, being that, you know, Duncanville is still, I think, trying to somewhat find its identity under, you know, Coach Samples. And, you know, some of the pieces are there. They've just yet to really put it all together. But that was a game where South Grand Prairie just had all the momentum coming into it. And I kind of expected almost SGP to have a little bit easier ride through that game than they did. But give Duncanville credit. They could have won that game.
They certainly could have. And they certainly look like a team that's going to make the playoffs. Are they? No. Because
they're
started
a worthy team, but no.
Yeah, they looked impressive on the field, but they've lost to Mansfield and to South Grand Prairie to start district play. They've still got Cedar Hill and DeSoto on the schedule. Making the playoffs will be a very, very, very difficult task for those guys. Garlett.
New high school coming, Garlett. 2019.
It should be Garland Garlett.
The Garlett matchup in Garland and Rowlett, 28-0.
Better than Roland.
Roland?
Sure. Yeah.
I kind of like Roland. 34-28, Rowlett with a win. Logan Bonner, though, concussed in that game. Mm-hmm. I have not heard an update on his status, but that would be a huge loss for them now that they've secured a 3-0 start in district. Bonner threw for 344, two touchdowns. Kobe Moore rushed for 166 and a touchdown. Ladarius Dickens caught 132 yards and a touchdown. You know, their big three really produced in that game, and they were up big. Garland needed a 21-point rally, and you know, they ended up kicking the ball. You know, they end up closing within a score and then kicking the ball deep with 5 minutes to go, and they don't get the ball back. Good ball control for Rowlett to close out that game. Do you still think that Rowlett is the favorite now, given the fact that they've gotten past Garland, or is the Saxy Rockwall contingent going to creep up on them at least once?
Well, and, you know, a lot of it obviously depends on Logan Bonner's status, but I really like Rockwall with where they're – people think they're coming out of nowhere, but it's because they played a tough schedule. I mean, with Ulis Trinity and Denton Ryan, among them, both teams still undefeated. And so I think Rockwall's going to be really tough. And Saxy, I know they did. They dropped the one game. But that offense, boy, you just got to be out there. You got to be rolling because they're going to score a lot of points.
In the district that everybody watches, and that is 6-6A, Allen with a convincing win over Louisville, 52-7. The big question was
they were down 7-0. What are they doing? It got dicey.
What are they doing at quarterback? Well, what they did is essentially split time at quarterback.
Right.
Jonke got 13 passes. He rushed for 111 yards. Seth Green got 9 passes. Rushes for 73 yards and 2 scores. They split their time. The big hero in that game, Kirby Bennett, 3 rushing touchdowns, over 100 yards rushing. How about this result? And this was a head-scratcher. McKinney Boyd, who we'd kind of said, well—
if you were out there, it wasn't a head-scratcher. That's where I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Boyd dominated.
The second half, yep. Here's the thing.
34-23 for those not in the know, and Boyd picks up the win. That's the first loss for Plano East.
The thing is, well, you factor in a couple of turnovers in the second half by Plano East, interceptions. Those played big. But the big thing to me was McKinney Boyd, who, I mean, if there aren't many other programs here that could be called more meat and potatoes-y in their approach in years past, right? They got a good quarterback, Grant Ressmeyer, and they did a good job kind of moving the ball in the first half, but they didn't run the ball, certainly weren't committed to it. And in the second half, Caden Markham, he ran for, in the first half, 1 rush for 2 yards and a touchdown. Second half, I think he ran 28 times.
Yeah, for 147 in total and 4 touchdowns.
Right, and Boyd's offensive line controlled things, and along with Markham, you know, making the most of each of those runs. And they protected Ressmeyer. It was one of those things, you know, we can only see so many games, and you look at different results, and you're like, well, what? How did this happen? I came out of that game thinking, how did Boyd lose particular games? Because they looked really impressive.
Yeah, they lost
to
Flower Mound.
I'm hearing Flower Mound
is a
tough
better.
Team, too.
I mean, yeah. Flower Mound is better, but that's going to be a game that's going to bite them in the end. I think that, dropping a game like that, could potentially be the difference between them making the playoffs and not. I saw them open the season against Mesquite Horn, and they looked impressive in a win over Horn, who's a pretty good team. Mm-hmm. And Markham had a nice performance. Ressmeyer played well, and they've got 3 wide receivers who are legitimate threats at the wide receivers position. How about the Plano East defense? A lot have been talked about their speed on defense. They've got a lot of talent on offense as well. Great receiving core and good quarterback, but it seemed like a pretty dominant performance in that second half by Boyd against a defense that had been lauded.
Well, and it might have been at the start that McKinney Boyd was giving Plano East, a lot of credit for what they could do against the run and got away from their own system a little bit, thinking, hey, we're going to have to throw the ball. We're going to have to do that to move it. Then in the second half came around and they just decided, no, we're going to play to our strength, which is we're going to run hard with this offensive line, which did a really good job. And they protected Ressmeyer really well most of the night. And the other thing was, Plano East had a hard time running the ball against Boyd. And Plano East, they've got a really nice quarterback, and they've got those 2 really good receivers who are scary when they get the ball in the open field.
Adi Amatosho and Tim Wilson.
Tim Wilson, yep. And so they did a good job, but they could not get the ball to them that much. And they certainly couldn't run the ball up the middle. And Boyd got enough possessions. Boyd started draining the clock, and you start feeling some pressure. East did because they got behind. I think there was a stretch in that game when McKinney Boyd ran 20 plays to 3 plays for Plano East and scored 20 points. Because in one of those, McKinney Boyd came out and did an onside kick.
But that was after a penalty.
It was after a penalty.
After a penalty had moved the ball to near midfield. That's a great
it's
a great call
there. It makes sense to do it, because the risk-reward is fantastic.
Right.
You're not giving them that great
position. Losing about 15 yards of field position.
And by getting the ball, they then drained off another few minutes, put another touchdown on there. And so I was really impressed by Boyd in that game.
Well, congrats to Don Drake and his kids. They're 3-3 and 2-2 in that district race, and they're right there. Marcus with a win over Flower Mound, 34-14. They get 100-yard rushing performance by Nate Hopkins, who scored a touchdown. C.J. Respass, their other running back, 3 touchdowns in that game. And Marcus improves to 4-1 and 3-1 overall, right behind Allen. And another surprising result in my estimation, and that is Plano West beating Plano. Plano, we came into the season and had such high expectations for. In fact, they were in the top 10 in our rankings there for a minute. But they now fall to 1-3 in district play with a 14-7 loss.
Yeah, and in that district with nine schools and a lot of really competitive schools to be 1-3,
right?
They're really going to have to rally quickly to get back in the thick of that.
And they've still got games against Marcus and teams like that.
All three Plano schools just really hard to figure out at this point, because I think at one point you would say, oh, I'll have like Plano East, Plano, and then Plano West. But now it's who knows?
Right. You know, but to start the season, I would have said Plano, Plano West, and Plano East, or probably, you know, something
and
like that.
And it's all shifted around. And I mean, I don't even know, saying today, you know, how you would exactly rank all those three, because somebody just has to start being consistent, and that seems to be a problem.
The upset of the night, I don't think there's any question about it, and that is Skyline and Jesuit. Let me talk to you a little bit about our selector's box. We pick have a pick'em every week, 30 games, and I don't exactly know what I was doing at the time, but I deleted Skyline's name and left Jesuit as the team that I was going to pick as I was running down this list of games. Well, earlier in the week, I'd done something that's like, well, Jesuit's improving, but Skyline has won 49 consecutive district games. They're going to win by three touchdowns. That was the notable games that I picked them by three touchdowns. So I looked great in the paper on Friday, terrible in the paper on Thursday, but Jesuit with a upset win, 24-21. Jacob Hallisch, their quarterback, he ends up scoring on an 18-yard run with 1:06 left, the go-ahead score. And that breaks Skyline's winning streak, and that puts Jesuit in the the driver's seat as far as winning the 9-6A title, which is, you know, it would be pretty shocking. Playoff-wise, this has virtually no significance.
Right.
Skyline is going to be in a large school, and Jesuit is going to be in the small school. There's the largest and smallest teams in that district. But that's certainly kind of a wake-up call as to where Skyline is, you know, overall. They were the number 10 team in the state, according to the Associated Press, and a lot of people, you know, including myself, had, you know, reasonable expectations for them to make a good run in Region 2. But Jesuit showed something, and Skyline did as well.
Yeah, and I think what it shows is, well, first of all, congrats to Jesuit. And I think Coach Hickman definitely thought they had a shot, because when I talked to him before that game, he said, hey, you know, who's going to be out here on Friday night? You know, I think it's going to be a good game. I'm like, well, I thought it was going to be a good game too, but I didn't pick Jesuit.
Right.
But it's funny, you know, our new rankings came out, and the first response always is somebody will point out, how is, you know, Jesuit below or above Plano East, and Plano East beat Jesuit? I'm like, yeah, but Skyline beat Arlington Martin, and Arlington Martin beat DeSoto. I mean, it's so confusing week to week. But so it's kind of a jumble. But I think, if anything, it'll be probably a wake-up call for Skyline, because and not to say that that Jesuit didn't just legitimately beat them, but Skyline, they're going to be in a tough deal being in Division I. They are Region II, but they're going to have to find another level if they're going to go make a run in the playoffs.
I don't think there's any question about that, because the Division II playoffs, you know, it's not Division I. It's not Region I, you know, as far as where Skyline is. Region 2 is not Region 1. There's some winnable games there where you're not having to play at your best. But as you go farther along, you're going to end up playing teams like Spring Westfield, you know, some fairly heavy hitters out of the Houston area, and that's they're going to have to play better to close out the season. But we'll talk to Brandon Hickman about that in part 2 of the podcast. Let's talk about some other games in 6A before we talk about some 5A and some private school action. Keller Central and Keller, nice win for Keller. Keller Central had a chance to get an onside kick and maybe make a desperation heave to win the game, but Keller Central bounces back from their loss to Guyer, 17-14. They improved to 4-1 and 1-1 in that district. Guyer and Ryan both win convincingly. That Ryan team is for real. They hold Byron Nelson to just 3 points.
Yeah, somebody told me on Twitter before, they said, you sure you want to pick Ryan in that game? It's Byron Nelson's homecoming. And I said, is that homecoming going to help them run against that defense? And that's nothing against Byron Nelson. I just really, I like that Ryan defense.
Yeah.
I think they're really good.
Lamar bounces back in a nice win over Bowie. Those are the two teams. They're 2-3 in the district as far as our expectations go. Shane Bouchel with 200 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. Rashad Polk with a touchdown as well, and Kofi Boateng with a touchdown receiving. But 30-23, close game. But Lamar bounces back, and they look like they're the team that's right behind Martin
at this point,
as that number two team in 4-6A. Let's talk some real quickly on some 5A action. Wiley East and Wiley. I thought this game was going to be close. And
usually is when those
Wiley
two play.
East must have just a buzzsaw at offense. And you knew that they had
Eno
Benjamin, who did it again. He rushes for 228 and 3 scores. Braden Shoemake, the Texas A&M baseball commit, he throws for 4 touchdowns and 233. Colby Williams with 2 of those touchdown catches. And Wiley East improves to 4-1 and 2-0 in district with a 56-28 win over Wiley. I've got to think that they're the favorite in that district, although, there's some other teams like Lovejoy that are out there in the weeds, wanting to cause some havoc there.
Well, and I think Wiley is just the favorite in there after the way they handled McKinney North a week or two ago pretty soundly. But that district, it's much like the Frisco district.
Yeah.
It's crazy enough that I'm not surprised, really, at least not wildly surprised by anything that happens out there.
They might have one of the best offenses, at least in 5A in our area, as far as Wiley East goes. Because, I mean, you knew they had the rushing attack, but for that passing game to come along like it did this past week, it was like, oh, there's other players on this team. And absolutely, when you get that balance, I mean, really dangerous.
Yeah, and Eno Benjamin kind of makes them the McKinney North of this year.
Right.
A guy who is a game changer at running back. Can break off some long runs and make it easier on your offense to do other things. I expect some big things. I think their lone loss is to Sachse, if I remember correctly.
Wiley East. No, they lost to Ryan, didn't they?
Yes, they did lose to Ryan. Yeah. That's right.
Which is another impressive view because Ryan kind of shut them down. Yeah, last year McKinney North had Ronald Jones, who's now playing for USC.
Yeah, Ronald Jones and Aka Cedric were both splitting some carries there at USC. So
and
impressive.
Ball and
yeah,
doing very well.
They're doing very well. McKinney North does bounce back with a win 46-18 over Prosper. That's Prosper's first district loss, but a nice performance there from McKinney North. Let's talk real quick the Frisco District. I was at the Thursday night game between the Colony and Frisco Lone Star. Crazy game. A game in which Lone Star had a big lead and then it was chiseled away to what was a 1-touchdown lead, and then a nice punt return by Jaden Dixon sets up a touchdown, and then they just kind of pull away late. Jason Shelley with a touchdown but he ends up accounting for 6 touchdowns, 3 on the ground, 3 in the air, as Lone Star improves to 6-0 for the first time in school history with a 56-28 win. Centennial keeps pace in that district. They're now 3-0 in district with a 48-41 win over Frisco Independence, a little bit closer than a lot of people expected.
Independence is making some strides.
Yeah, they are.
The Independence quarterback threw 70 times in that game.
Wow.
He had
that guy.
70 pass attempts and went over 500 yards. But I had like flashbacks from the Carrollton Creek View story I wrote.
The pitching
where the pitcher threw for 120 some odd pitches in an extra. I don't remember if it was extra in game or not, but I was like, oh, there's that stat.
Well, he's a Kyle Sadler. He's actually one of the leaders in passing. I mean, he's had a good season thus far.
I'm like just convinced that if you attend school in Frisco ISD, your offense is going to be bananas. Like, whether a running back or a quarterback, it seems like every school in that district just has one guy who's putting up over 300 yards of offense by themselves every week.
Case in point, Anthony Pegues rushes for 295 and a touchdown in that win. He's hitting almost a 300-yard mark in every game. Another back in Frisco who's going crazy. Is our offensive player of the week this week, and that is Idris Ali from Frisco. Frisco with a nice win over Heritage. I think you can count out Heritage's chances for the playoffs. They were a third-round team last year, but they end up losing to Frisco 47-35. They're now 0-3 in district play. Ali with 338 on the ground, 5 touchdowns. But Heritage, with their 35 points, Bubba Ogbabor, their receiver, he catches – three touchdowns, 248.
I'm telling you.
In the air. So.
Yeah, and it should be noted, too, that Frisco has a monster offensive line, one of the best centers in the country as far as recruiting goes.
Jack Anderson.
It makes it way, you know, that's your running back's best friend. Also, Ali is up for our hero of the week, as is the South Lake Carroll wide receiver. So just a quick plug there, that vote for your hero of the week.
Cool. Yeah. I like how Avi is pushing that. Let's
do it. I'm sorry.
Private school scores real quick.
No shame.
That we were looking at Oak Ridge and St. Mark's. Oak Ridge picks up their first loss of the season, 28-16. St. Mark's with a win, and they improved to 2-2 in SBC North. In TAPS Division I, District 1, you had Bishop Lynch falls to Argyle Liberty Christian, 38-21. Liberty Christian now 2-0 in conference. A real surprising result here just by how close it was. And that's Bishop Dunn, 35-31 over Nolan. Dunn, our number one ranked team in our large school private rankings. They're now 5-0. Bishop, you know, Nolan is 0-5 and 0-2 in district play, but they've always been a great team in that district, and certainly, you know, played well there on Friday night. In a game of unbeatens, and one of the few game of unbeatens, in fact, it might have been the only game between two unbeatens, and that was Grapevine Faith Christian with a 31-21 win over Fort Worth Christian. They improved to 5-0 overall. Well, that's it for part one. Part two, we've got Brandon Hickman, and then we will come back and talk in part three about some score or some games to watch in the coming week. For part two of the Sports Day HS Weekly Football Podcast, we've got Jesuit coach Brandon Hickman. Coach, we all believed in you last week. Congratulations. Congratulations on the huge win, 24-21 over Dallas Skyline, which breaks a 49-game Skyline district winning streak. What were the expectations going into that week? I mean, did you guys feel like you had a puncher's chance, or did you feel like you could match up pretty well with them?
Yeah, I don't know if you ever match up real well with Skyline. You know, we felt good about the game plan. Our kids were confident. I felt like they understood what we wanted them to try to accomplish. And, you know, we just wanted to go have fun was the main thing. We told the kids to play loose, have a good time. It was actually televised, and I didn't want them feeling pressure with that. I said, nobody's going to watch it on TV anyway, so you might as well just go play and have fun, and it kind of worked out in our favor.
What was the game plan going in? Were you trying to shorten the game and try to keep their explosive plays at a minimum?
We were. I mean, you have to keep their offense off the field, and they've got just athletes all over the place out there and so much speed, so we decided to more of a ball control attack would help us, kind of the same game plan we used early in the season against Bowie. So, you know, we wanted to control the clock, but against them it's really tough to get first downs. You know, it feels like they've got 15, 20 players on the field at once. But we were able to move the chains and convert some third down situations late in the game that, you know, helped us get over the top.
If people aren't figuring out this Jesuit program, you guys graduated so much offensive talent last year. It's amazing. You graduated Bo Schneider, who threw 45 touchdown passes. He had two receivers, Garrett Amy and Charlie Eichenberg, combined for 32 touchdown catches. And Matt Slovak was kind of the, you know, unsung motor of that offense, 1,000-yard rusher, 16 touchdowns. How have you managed to, you know, put together, you know, this offensive team so quickly? I know that you're high on your quarterback, junior quarterback Jacob Polish.
Oh yeah, he's, you know, we didn't even have Jacob in the spring because of baseball. You know, he was playing in the playoffs, and our kids went deep in the playoffs, and that's probably the best thing for him as far as confidence as a sophomore last year, getting in big games and pitching and winning games late in the season. So, you know, we really had to go with a young quarterback in the spring, kind of putting some pieces together on the O-line. Had a receiver that decided to come out for football that played basketball, Rusty Landon, who's been a big surprise. And then Connor Lamfer, our other receiver, was kind of a kicker slash backup receiver in the past. And those guys have just rose to the occasion, and, you know, and they're doing a great job each week. Also, Max Loughborough, he's a returning starter, a slot receiver that gets in the backfield for us, and I thought he played outstanding the other night, blocking and running, you know, some tough yards there. But, you know, we knew we'd be a little bit different offensively. I think sometimes you got to change your scheme a little bit with the kids that you have. You know, last year we were able to throw the ball, you know, 50 times a game with Bo Schneider and light it up. And this year we're a little bit more ball control, a little bit slower pace. You know, we don't have anybody in the top of the area stat-wise at all, and that's something I've told the kids. That's okay. You know, that's not a big deal. We're still averaging, you know, 38 to 40 points a game, and we're winning. That's our main goal.
Yeah, you mentioned you kind of had to piece together an offensive line, and then you play Skyline, and I saw Skyline beat Arlington Martin and play Cedar Hill really tough, and I thought their defensive front was just fantastic. How well did your offensive line, they must have done a good job against Skyline, but how well did they hold up against that front?
Well, my right guard weighs 220 pounds, so he was going against a kid that weighs 320, and the Wallace kid, who's an outstanding player, seems like a really nice kid, too. I was able to talk to him after the game for a little bit, and you know, we just hung in there up front. I thought our kids battled. We competed. We got just enough of them on run plays, you know, and tried to kind of wear them out late in the game. I felt like in the fourth quarter with about 5 minutes there on that last drive, we tempoed a little bit, you know, on a couple of fourth down situations and short. We lined up quickly and snapped the ball and got the first down, and we just wanted to try to wear on them a little bit. And, you know, our offensive line's improving each week. I've got three juniors and two seniors up front, and those guys played really well. And, you know, they had pressure on us. They had a couple sacks. And you know, I feel like every time we were pass blocking, they were knocking us back 3 yards, you know. And but we just kind of hung on, and we made the right blocks there late in the game. And you know, that last play, Jacob was able to spring it for a touchdown.
Are you guys more healthy on defense? I saw you guys in the first week of practice heading into week one. Do you have your defensive guys back?
We do. You know, we're still out. We've got most of our guys back. We still are out. Our captain, Austin Kaler, was injured against Wiley. He broke his wrist, and so he's been out. And we had another outside linebacker that tore his knee the first night of practice. So those two are still out. Kaler might have a chance to come back around week 9, but he still has to go to the doctor and make sure that the bone has not moved or shifted. But other than that, we've had two guys step in there and that have done a great job. And we're older on defense. You know, our secondary is the same group we had last year, minus one. We actually got a young man that's a big lacrosse player here that committed to Michigan to play lacrosse. He's about 6'2", 220 safety, John Michael Pretty, who's been a big surprise for us back there and has done a really good job and made a lot of tackles Friday night. You know, I feel like our defense is older. Our defensive line, our front three, have been outstanding this season. And I thought Friday night they really stepped up big against their offensive line.
With the win, Jesuit improves to 4-1. Your lone loss in the season was a kind of a shootout to Plano East, 57-42. What did you learn in that game, you know, about your team and what you needed to change and alter moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I learned. I think as a team learned. You know, I was talking to the kids after that game that, hey, we can't turn the ball over and win games. You know, we had, I think, 4 turnovers and about 5 drop balls in crucial parts of the game. And you just can't win with that. And I told them if we want to move on and beat good teams, we got to take care of the football because nobody's really beaten us. We've beaten ourselves. And I think the kids believe that. You know, we were down 8 with about 5 minutes in that game with 4 turnovers. You know, so we still had a chance to try to come back and tie it up, but we just couldn't finish. And so I think we learned a lot from that game. I'm glad that game actually happened. We really were able to focus more in practice on securing the ball and paying a little bit more to the detail with the football in our hands. And, you know, if we dropped the ball in practice, you know, we'd give the kids a reminder for doing that. And with an up down, you know, it's kind of what we do. But we dropped a lot of balls too that following week of that game. And so I thought our receivers will be the strongest ones in the state. I don't know if we'll be the best, but we'll be the strongest for sure.
Coach, given that, you know, you finally get over that Skyline hurdle, you guys have been the kind of the district rival for Skyline these past 4 years, but, you know, you've not been able to get over the hump. Now that you've done that, what are your expectations for the rest of the season? And do you think that you can make a nice run to the playoffs like you did a couple of years ago?
I do. You know, our goal is to win the district championship, you know, and we got to take it 1 week at a time. And we had our team meeting this morning. I told the guys, you know, enjoy that win, but now we have to move on. And it's real easy to get complacent as a team after you beat the number 10 team in the state of Texas. like a Dallas Skyline, and we don't want our kids to get complacent. I told them I want more focus this week than you've ever had all season. And so just challenging those guys and coming out each day and getting better at practice every rep that you're out there. And, you know, we have chemistry this year. We don't have any big-name players on our team, but we've got chemistry. I think the kids care about each other a lot, and they want to play well for each other. Our coaches staff gets along great. I was able to hire a couple guys, you know, over the past few years that have been great, and also the coaches that have been at Jesuit for a while. And there's a lot of cohesion. That's working out real well. I think we can make a run in the playoffs. We just have to stay healthy. You know, Corbett's been out here before. I know you have too, Matt. It's just, you know, we don't have a lot of kids at Jesuit. We've got 200 players in our whole program. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is staying healthy. We can't afford to lose, you know, especially some lineman type kids or a skill kid, because we don't really have a whole lot behind that.
Well, Coach Brandon Hickman, thanks very much for joining us. We'll close with our three questions segment like we do every week here on the Sports Day HS podcast. First question, you're a TCU grad and a former lineman on the TCU team. When did you play, Coach?
I played in 1993-94.
How did you guys do against the University of Texas during that? And did you catch any of Saturday's game during homecoming to TCU when they won and put up 30 points in the first quarter in a 50-7 win?
Well, back when I played, I guess, was that 20 years ago, we lost to Texas both years I was there. The year before, they had beaten Texas 23-14 at TCU. But my junior and senior year, they beat us both of those years. I think Makovic was the head coach then. They had a really talented team. J.J. Joe, I think, was a quarterback. Or not J.J. Joe. I can't remember the name of the quarterback for them. Anyway, they had a couple guys on that squad that were very talented. And on defense, they had Tony Brackens and a few other guys. I remember trying to block him the whole game, which was a nightmare. But we came on the short end of it. So it's kind of nice to see. My senior year at TCU was the first time we'd been to a bowl game in 10 years. We were able to play Virginia in the Independence Bowl my senior year.
I remember that game.
Southwest Conference Championship. And then after that, you know, TCU kind of went down and then came back up once Garrett Francione got there. Then he brought Patterson along. So to be able to see TCU have the success that they've had has been pretty outstanding. You know, they've done some big things. So, yeah, every Saturday I try to tune into the TCU game. And my son and I were able to go to about 7 games last year, and he and I actually flew out to the bowl game last year when they played Ole Miss. Wow. And so I follow TCU quite a bit. So I'm pretty close with a couple of coaches on that staff there, and one of them coached when I was there, Coach Sharp, and then Jared Anderson, the O-line coach I played with in college. And so, you know, it was nice to get – I got a text message from those guys the other day about our win, so it's kind of nice to do that and reciprocate that to them. It was a big win for them. I thought Texas would actually play them a little bit better, but it was okay. I was happy to see TCU win it. Yeah. So.
Okay, as far as these two shows, and you can go off the reservation because several people have, which do you prefer, Friday Night Lights, the TV series, or Varsity Blues, the movie?
Oh, yeah, I'm for sure Friday Night Lights. I wish they still aired it. I mean, that was my favorite show. That's the only TV show I'd watch. Other than that, it was ESPN. My wife would get on to me, you know, about watching college football all the time. But Friday Night Lights for sure. Coach Taylor and what was the actor in the movie? Riggins.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd be a fun kid to coach, you know?
Yeah.
Final question for you, Coach. Does TCU win the Big 12 this year?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think they will. You know, I think that Baylor is going to come down to that Baylor game at the end. And matter of fact, our strength coach here worked at Baylor for 3 years, and so he and I have some bragging rights for sure. He's got me a little bit from last year's game. That was tough, but I think TCU's got a shot this year to beat them if their defense keeps improving, and I think if they stay healthy, I think their offense is pretty tough to beat. Same with Baylor. You know, it's going to be a heck of a game.
Well, Coach, thank you very much for joining us on the Sports Day HS podcast, Brandon Hickman. Well, it's a pleasure as always.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
part three.
Yay.
It's always Avi's favorite part.
Right.
Yay. Yeah. Do it again. Do it again.
Part three. Some good games in week seven.
Yeah.
Not great ones. Certainly, I think everybody's eyes are going to be on District 14 5A. We'll talk about those games in a second. Thursday night action. Really not a ton to speak of. Denton Guyer and Keller Fossil Ridge. You know, Fossil Ridge is off to a good start, but they've had some, you know, real close wins. Guyer, of course, is the behemoth in that district. Fossil Ridge, good to see Bryce Baccarini back at quarterback. He'd suffered a pretty bad concussion against Mansfield Lake Ridge, but is now back on the team and playing well. Played well last week in a win. The big game of that night will be DeSoto and Mansfield. They're at Vernon Newsom Stadium. That will be a game that I am attending, but certainly a game to watch there in that District 8-6A. In district play on Friday night, what do you think about this Plano East game? I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this could be one of those places where Plano East continues to stumble. You know, a rival game against a team. The brothers are playing each other, you know, Jadon and Joey facing off, the McCullough Bowl. But there's a lot on the line for both these teams. Plano has to have a win, and Plano East cannot afford a back-to-back loss.
Yeah, I think there are so many elements to this game that make it look like it's going to be a really tight squeeze at the end. Not only are they rivals, that's kind of a number one thing. You got a team that Plano East has stumbled a little bit last week, although maybe that gives them more motivation, I don't know. But on Plano's side, I mean, there's desperation. And I really do believe that there's an effect on that. When you have a team that goes out there with some desperation, seeing their season basically on the brink, at least in regards to making the playoffs, Plano's going to come out there very hard. Plano Senior is going to. And I think that's going to be a really good game. And really the only way I see for Plano to get back in that playoff race, they've got to beat Plano East.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it's
otherwise,
a must
they're
win
1-4, and there's just too many good teams in that district to get in the top four.
And what I thought was interesting is Plano lost 14-7. You know, only 7 points. And initially when I saw that score, I was like, oh, you know, Brandon Stevens must have been, you know, stopped that game. Brandon Stevens had a decent game.
He had a nice game,
He had 127 yards and a touchdown. They need to add in the passing game to it as well, I think. I mean, it's just like one of these things where you're never going to win a game scoring only 7 points. And, you know, if they had fits with Plano West, they'd certainly have to step it up this week.
Right. But that's certainly the biggest game in that district. You've got Allen hosting Hebron in what should be a good game there for Allen. You know,
they should move into number two alone.
Yeah.
After that grueling.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. They're now 49 consecutive wins. They're tied for second overall in state history with South Lake Carroll and Abilene.
Right.
Carroll was, I believe, from 04 to 07, and Abilene was 54 to 57 or something to that effect. But, they'll move into, a single tie. They'll move into second place all alone at 50
only tied with themselves.
Hebron is one of the few teams that has handed Allen a district loss in like the last
decade. They're the last team to hand Allen a district
loss. Are they the last one?
And, with Kyle Aubuchon at quarterback. And I was at that game as a stringer for the Dallas Morning News way back when. I think that's the last district loss for
do you remember
what
year that was?
I think it might have been 09.
Yeah, that's probably right. Because before that, I think it was just Plano way back in 05.
Right.
But this year, this is probably not the Hebron team that can do it.
And you've got Marcus and Plano West there at Kimbrough, so that'll be an interesting game. Marcus certainly looked great on both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
District 8-6A action. Duncanville goes on the road to Cedar Hill. Cedar Hill is 5-0 and rolling.
Duncanville's got to have a win.
Duncanville's got to have a win, but, I was impressed with the way that they played.
God, Cedar Hill's doing so well.
Yeah, they're really cruising, and, you know, they played well last week against Middle Lothian. You know, had a little trouble figuring out what that slot T or flex bone. I guess they're running flex bone just for a little bit, and then Avery Davis took over and played lights out. Big game in 10-6A. Potentially for the district title, and that is Mesquite Horn going to Highlander Stadium to face Highland Park.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a real good one. Mm. You know, Highland Park, eked past North Mesquite there in their district opener at home. They're now on a one-game winning streak at Highlander.
Right.
Yeah, at Highlander Stadium. But Horn certainly has got a lot of talent. Chris Robison, their quarterback, has played pretty well this year.
Mm-hmm.
In 5A action. Gotta like that Frisco district. Always some good games, and this week,
parity.
Potentially the district decider. Certainly a game that I'm looking out for, and that is Lone Star versus Centennial at Toyota Stadium.
What's the over-under on that game?
You got 90? Yeah, I'd say probably 80, 85.
We're getting up in the Bishop Dunn range now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those teams can put it up. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Centennial, you'll get to see Anthony Pegues, Jason Shelley, the quarterback at Lone Star, can do some really phenomenal things. A really interesting matchup there. Wakeland and the Colony should be a good game as well. In that district, that's at Tommy Briggs and at the Colony.
Not to get us off on too big of a tangent, but who do you guys think are the four playoff teams in that district?
Well, I've got to like Lone Star and Centennial. Yep. Frisco's been mighty impressive. Mm-hmm. And then probably Wakeland, although, Lone Star could be there.
You already said Lone Star.
I mean, not Lone Star. The Colony could be
the
there.
The Colony. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It could be the Colony. There's still enough weeks where it's crazy to figure out. But the Colony, with their makeup, I would make them the best bet, but don't bet on anything in that district.
No, I mean, Liberty could sneak up there. They've got Little Elm this week, and I think that would give them two district wins there if they end up getting that. But there's a lot to be decided in that district.
Yep.
Another potential district decider, somewhat as far as playoffs go, and that's in 10-5A. McKinney North travels to Lovejoy. Lovejoy needs to keep pace with a red-hot Wiley East team. Wiley East is traveling to Prosper. Both of those games, pretty interesting Friday night games. West Mesquite and Terrell in 12-5A.
Terrell's been very impressive.
Terrell's been really good. Their lone loss was to a 4A opponent, though, in Kauffman, and no shame in that. Kauffman has only one loss this year, and that was to Kennedale.
You love Kauffman.
I do. They've been really impressive. Craig Barker and his kids have really done a good job. The Proxes, the Drew Proxes, it's one of the best names in the Metroplex.
Approximately.
Good one. You're a good one, Avi. I'll make sure I edit in a drum hit on that.
Okay.
14-5A, though, that's the show, and it's going to be the show for most of the time. Summit travels to Waxahachie. Summit's unbeaten. Hatchie is reeling. Two district losses. They need a win.
Coming off a bye, so that might...
All these teams are coming off byes. Yeah. All had byes last week. Seguin and Mansfield Legacy could be a potential playoff decider there for that last spot in that district. Mansfield Lake Ridge and Timberview is a mighty spicy meatball. You gotta like that matchup. That is at Mansfield Vernon Newsom Stadium.
Did you have to twist your mustache as you Lake, said that?
Lake Ridge is our number one, and Timberview was our preseason number one.
Yeah, and Timberview's still ranked.
They're still good in our
top ten. They've got a lot of talent. It's a big game for Timberview because they lost to Lancaster last time. Matt Lancaster goes on the road to Red Oak there to close out those district games. Probably the best game on the schedule that's not in the Dallas area will be a private school game, ESD at 6-0, unbeaten at SBC South, playing probably the best private school in the state in Bel Air Episcopal. Bel Air Episcopal with, I think he's considered the best defensive tackle prospect in the nation for the junior class.
Oh, God, yeah.
Marvin Wilson, a big old beast. Also, Crandall and Kauffman, they face off. It'll be an interesting matchup. Matt, thoughts on this week? It seems like this is the time of the year where you start to get those must-win, like truly must-win games where teams start to have to start putting together some consecutive wins in order to keep those playoff hopes alive.
Yeah, I think 6-6A will be an interesting one. We were talking about Plano East and Plano. I'm really interested to see what happens with that. And even interested to see if Plano West can give Marcus a game. But I know I'm going out to that Lone Star Centennial game.
I think that
district is fun to watch every week. I may not be back until Saturday morning around 4.
Well, it's a 7 o'clock start, so you get
true. I get that half an hour.
You get that half an hour extra lead in, so that's good for you.
You know what's a really good game actually coming out of 12-5A is Forney and Mesquite Poteet.
Oh, Forney at 5-0. I still don't really know where they stand because they have not played.
Mm-hmm. That Poteet's defense going up against Luke Skipper, who's statistically just destroying
he's been great.
Nations.
Yeah, he's
but
been great.
Now they get to go up against Mesquite Petit, and that's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out.
It'll be interesting to see how Forney plays against that big three, because in that district it's been Rockwall, I guess even big four now. It's been Rockwall, Heath, Poteet, West Mesquite, and now Terrell.
Terrell beat Rockwall.
You've got those teams that are you know, the I think the cream of the crop in that district. I don't know where Forney fits in that mix, but if they can pull off a win against one or more of those teams, then they're looking at a playoff berth. But certainly a great start for Forney. Well, that's it for week seven. Remember to subscribe to us on Sports Day, the Sports Day HS. You can just search Sports Day HS in iTunes, and we'll be there. You can set it up to where it'll automatically download the podcast whenever it shows up there in the iTunes store. But
we have control over your phone.
Well,
the podcast part of it.
And remember to set as your homepage the beta site. It looks really good, and it's making improvements week by week.
Yeah, just keep telling
us. We're adding things in.
Yep.
Tell us, you know, what you think, what you think we can do better. Just do it in a polite way. Yeah. I know the internet's not the best place to find that.
Obi's had a tough start to the Monday. Come on, man. Be nice to him.
I'm just over here.
He's just a man, flesh and blood.
Yeah.
Just working hard.
I believe just like you do.
He does. Thank you guys for listening.
I'll bring my violin next time.
No. Matt with a big power yawn to end this. Hey, thanks for listening, and you guys have a great week.